Small businesses. Direct Line guarantee to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado, coming to you on a beautiful, clear, sunny morning here in the Mile High City. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every Wednesday and bring it just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you're going to get anywhere else. If you haven't heard it, you need to check it out. If you have heard it, you need to share it with someone else. A couple things before we get going here. Download the podcast on iTunes. If you're not an iTunes person, I understand. Go to Stitcher, or you can just listen to our website. We do have a website. Couple different ways that you can contact me if you have something for me. Go to Twitter. Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports. Go to Facebook. Once again, Daily Dose Sports. We're keeping it simple here for you. And if you want to check out our website, I put up some new articles, try to get a few articles up every single week. DailyDoseSports.wordpress.com. You can see a couple of the articles that I write, find links to the podcast, find some polls, find some different things that you're not going to find anywhere else. Check out our website. I encourage you to. We've had some good feedback this week on the website and got a lot of different ideas and a lot of comments and stuff like that. So feel free to check out the website. I think there'll be some stuff there that you enjoy. Today, going to be recapping a crazy day in the NFL yesterday. My phone was blowing up all day. People were contacting me. Hey, what's going on here? Who's going where? What is this trade? What is my team doing? We're going to recap all that for you and get you caught up. Plus, college basketball tournament is coming up. We have conference tournaments going this week. Some really, really exciting stuff we want to talk about there. Got a little Major League Baseball we're going to talk. Got to talk about the NBA. The NBA is rolling along. And as usual, we have our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to miss that today. Are you struggling? Are you struggling with the daylight savings thing? I got to be honest. I am struggling with the daylight savings thing. I know, spring forward and we turn our clocks forward and fall back. I'm having a hard time. I find I'm staying up way too late every week or every night. And then I'm waking up like during the night, like halfway through the night. Then I can't get back to sleep. And then I fall back asleep. And then, you know, the alarm's going off and I'm running late. I feel like all day I'm just dragging. I think there are people who have actually recovered from like the Ebola virus faster than I am adjusting to just the stupid 1 hour time change. And can we just stop with the time change already? Do we really need to do this still? I know this started back in like Germany, back in World War I. Do we really need to do this? I have enough problems in life without, you know, trying to figure out and remember twice a year how to change the clock on my microwave. I guess, you know, they say that they did this so that we would have more light after work hours in the spring. But we don't stay on it because then it causes problems and it causes problems for farmers and stuff like that. I don't understand any of this. Like cows know what time it is anyways. If they want us to embrace this whole time change thing, it's really, really simple. And I've got a great idea for this. Like, the Daily Dose is here to help you. We're here to help people. If you want us to embrace this stupid time change that we do twice a year, here's a great idea. Spring forward 4 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. Hey, everybody, it's now 5 p.m. You can take off the hour early. Hey, then I'll adjust. I'll adjust a little bit easier if you do that. And then in the fall, hey, fall back. Okay, we're going to fall back at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. I know you thought you were due at work. Take an extra hour, get a little more sleep, and then you can come in after an hour. Then I'd adjust a little bit better. But the 2 in the morning, I don't understand any of it. Hey, we've got a lot of things breaking, and we have a ton of things to get to. First off, breaking, there is a proposal coming out on behalf of the NBA, the NCAA, and the National Association of Basketball Coaches. They are talking about putting out a solution to prevent underclassmen from leaving early for the NBA draft if they aren't assured of being a high pick. This is a result of meetings from last year, and they're talking about you would move the date that college players could withdraw from the NBA draft, which is what they should do. Isn't this about doing what's best for the kids? Again, adults always get in the way of doing what's right for the kids. Underclassmen would participate in a combine, allow teams to evaluate them, and we could see, are you really ready to step up and play at that next level? And if not, we're going to encourage you to go ahead and go back to college because you need a little more time. I like the direction this is going. I like the direction it's going. Like I've always said, if you want to do this the right way, allow kids to feel out where they're going to go, see how I'm going to do if I'm not ready, and I declare for college, okay, then you got to stay in college for 2, 3, 4 years, whatever we want it to be. If you declare and you jump, then okay, you got to jump and you got to stick in it. But let's at least let these kids find out, how do NBA teams view me? Am I really going to be a high pick, or am I going in and I'm not even going to get drafted? Because we have a lot of kids that don't get drafted, and then they're not allowed to go back to college either, so they're in this no man's land. It's a mess. I like the direction this is going. I think that's a good idea. We don't talk a lot of golf, but PGA golfer John Daly is complaining about the PGA's tour, the drug testing that goes on. He said it's a big joke. He says it's not random drug testing at all. I don't have any idea about the drug testing policy in the PGA. I don't know. But I know who would know, and that's John Daly. Because he probably knows how to beat it. He probably knows exactly what they're doing. I'm sure if anybody understands the drug policy, it is my cousin, John Daly. So he says that the biggest thing is the predictability of the drug testing, and that he knows exactly when he's going to be tested every single week. I want to talk about this a little more in the future, because I think there's some drug testing things going on in the PGA that a lot of people aren't aware of. I want to talk about that a little more in the future. Obviously, yesterday, we saw some huge moves in the NFL. If you didn't catch it last night, Darrell Revis was with the New England Patriots. He is now going back to the Jets. 5 years, $70 million. $70 million. He says, I'm coming home, New York. Yeah, I'd go wherever you want me to for $70 million. Going to talk a little more about that in just a little bit. Here's one that kind of surprised me. Linebacker Jason Worilds, Pittsburgh Steelers free agent outside linebacker, isn't going to be making any visits. He was being talked about being brought back to the Steelers. Where is he going to go? Is he going to sign with someone else? 27 years old, has decided to retire. Going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, too. And then we've just got a number of different moves that are being talked about. DeMarco Murray talking with the Jaguars, maybe has some interest with the Eagles. There's a lot of different things moving around. Terrence Knighton visiting Washington today. We'll see if he ends up signing, back there with Washington. Just a crazy day in the NFL. And let's just jump in, because looking at all these NFL moves, we saw trades, we saw signings, we saw money being thrown around. And when I listen to the people on the big networks, I listen to these talking hairdos, you always get this thing of who are the big winners? Who are the big losers? Big winners in free agency got to be the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it has to be the Oakland Raiders, and it has to be the Buffalo Bills, and teams like the Miami Dolphins, of course. They signed Ndamukong Suh. They've got to be one of the big winners. And then you've got the losers. And the losers, so far I've heard a little bit, New England Patriots have been a loser. They lost Revis, and the Denver Broncos have lost a couple players. They're one of the losers so far. I kind of have a different opinion. First off, do you see a trend in the winners and the losers right there? Just right off the bat, the teams I named? The winners are kind of the teams that are always down every single year. And the losers are the teams that seem like they're a playoff contender every year. Do you see a trend here in the free agency thing? And I don't have any idea how this is all going to shake out eventually, and no one does. We're gonna keep an eye on this. We'll see which players really improve. We saw trades. We saw signings. We saw different things. But I do know this. I know that money spent doesn't mean money spent well. And there's a big, big difference here. Here's some numbers I just want to throw out to you, and I want you to think about these. Ndamukong Suh, 6 years, $114 million. Now, here's one thing I want you to keep in mind when you're talking about player contracts like this. Guaranteed money is all we really care about. Contracts like this, the 6 years isn't the big thing. The $114 million isn't the big thing. It's what is it going to be on the cap per year, and what is the guaranteed money, because that's what's tied up. 6 years, I can cut you after two. So I don't care about that. The $114 million, I might only end up paying $28 million. That's not the big number. But 6 years, $114 million? Are you kidding me? That is a huge price tag. With a team, with Miami, that already has a very good defense. It's not like you look at the Dolphins and say, well, they'd be pretty good if they could just get a defense. No, they have a good defense. They don't have any offense. And I'm not sure they have any offense yet. you're going to still have a very good defense. I don't know if it's going to be that, you know, markedly better, but they're still going to have a very good defense. You still don't have any offense, and I still don't have a ton of faith in your quarterback. I think he's okay. I think he might be good. I'm not sure. Devin McCourty re-signed with the Patriots. 5 years, $47.5 million. Randall Cobb re-signed with the Packers. Orlando Franklin. And this is where we start getting into these numbers that are a little bit crazy. Because there are certain teams out here. The Raiders, the Jets, the Jaguars. There's a few teams out there. And they have to spend money. If they don't spend money, they are actually going to have money taken away from them. So they must spend money. And we are starting to see some big, big contracts being thrown around like it's nothing because they have to spend the money. They must spend the money. And so San Diego Chargers sign Orlando Franklin. Now, I saw Orlando Franklin last year with the Denver Broncos. I watched him all season. I wasn't impressed. I felt like he was giving up play after play of people going by him. Chargers gave him 5 years and $36.5 million. The Jaguars went and got Julius Thomas. Julius Thomas has been healthy in his career exactly part of one season. 5 years, $46.5 million. Do you see the money that is being thrown around? I don't want to see haphazardly, but it kind of is. You are throwing around huge money. Brandon Flowers, 4 years, $36 million. The Bills go get Jerry Hughes, 5 years, $45 million. That's a huge contract, even though the Chiefs are already over the cap. They are going to have to cut people to get under the cap because they're over the cap. It's a little bit crazy. When you see teams like the Oakland Raiders signing a center, Rodney Hudson, for 5 years and $44.5 million, you have to say, wait a second. Are you really one of the winners here? Or are you just in a hurry to get out there and spend money? And really, when we talk about the winners in free agency, don't we just talk about the most active teams? It's not like we sit here and we say, well, you know, the Broncos were really a big winner. No, they didn't really do anything. They signed a couple tight ends yesterday. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they didn't really do much, so they must be one of the losers. We talk about the most active teams. We shouldn't label this winners and losers in free agency. We should label this active teams and non-active teams. I don't have any idea if you're a winner or a loser. Now, typically in the NFL, we don't see a lot of big trades. Player-for-player trades don't happen. A lot of times you'll have a player and you say, hey, I'm going to trade my starting tight end for your fourth-round draft pick, whatever. We saw some player-for-player trades in the NFL yesterday. We see this in the NBA. We see this on trade deadline. We see this in the NHL. Sometimes you'll see it a little bit in baseball. We don't see this in the NFL. It doesn't happen. But we've seen a few. Obviously, you know, the Bills saying Kiko Alonso over to the Eagles for LeSean McCoy. We talked about that a little bit last week. Then the Ravens yesterday, they had to replace Ndamukong Suh. They go get Haloti Ngata. Or they trade Haloti Ngata to the Lions. Sorry, the Lions needed to replace Ndamukong Suh. Seahawks have a huge trade. They trade their center, Max Unger, to the Saints for Jimmy Graham. Not sure about that one. I realize Pete Carroll wishes he had a tight end in the Super Bowl. I understand that. I guess maybe if he had a tight end in the Super Bowl, I wouldn't be looking at him as such a moron for the play that he called in the Super Bowl. But you did lose a very good center in Max Unger. And then the trade of the day, and the trade that has Eagles fans wondering, what on earth is Chip Kelly doing? The Eagles send their quarterback, Nick Foles, and I believe a fourth-round pick, to the Rams for Sam Bradford. And when I say Sam Bradford, I'm putting that word in quotation marks because we haven't seen Sam Bradford, the real Sam Bradford, in about three seasons. Sam Bradford blows out his knee like Derrick Rose. So we haven't seen Sam Bradford for a while. And then I think the Eagles are getting like a sixth-round pick back. Like, the Eagles gave the Rams so much more, I thought, than they got in return. Now, couple thoughts on this. Eagles fan, I know you're out there, and I know you are gripping, and I know you're sitting there saying, I don't understand this. I don't know what we're doing. I have no clue what Chip Kelly is thinking. I've got a couple thoughts on this. We're going to help you through this. First option. Option number one. Chip Kelly got drunk and did this on a dare. Like, dude, I dare you just to trade away Nick Foles and like a fourth round pick and get Sam Bradford in return. That's a possibility. I don't know if it's what happened, but it is a possibility when you look at this. When you look at this trade, I think that's out there. Here's another one. Jeff Fisher calls Chip Kelly and like double dog dares him to swap quarterbacks. Like, dude, I dare you to do it. No. I'm not trading you Nick Foles for Sam Bradford. Are you kidding me? Sam Bradford's horrible. Dude, I dare you to do it. I double dog dare you. Yeah, okay. All right, let's do it. That's also a possibility. Maybe Fisher got him with the old, I mean, nobody falls for that old joke, but maybe Chip Kelly fell for the old double dog dare. I don't know. Here's another option out there that I think might be. I believe that, you know, when you look at Chip Kelly and you look at the players he was getting when he was up at Oregon, very rarely was he getting the five-star top-of-the-line recruit. That didn't happen. Chip Kelly found the right guys for his system and understood this is the type of player I need. No, he doesn't meet all this criteria. No, he doesn't jump the highest, run the fastest, but he fits what I need. I think Chip Kelly maybe looks at Sam Bradford and says he can do the things that I need. Maybe. I don't know if Sam Bradford can do it. To me, at this point in his career, Sam Bradford is a jersey that says Sam Bradford covering up a garbage bag full of knotted rope. But maybe that's just me. Maybe he's got more behind the scenes that I don't get. Last option that this might be, and I'm going to throw this out there, are the Tennessee Titans interested at all in a quarterback? And I believe that they are. And if so, would they give up the second round overall pick plus the second pick overall in the NFL draft coming up for Sam Bradford and the Eagles' first pick? And if that's the case, there is the venue for Chip Kelly to step in and get Marcus Mariota. Just has to make that deal with the Tennessee Titans, and then it all makes sense, doesn't it? Just throwing that out there. A couple different options that you might think about. A couple other trades that I do want to talk about. Brandon Marshall. Obviously, a former Denver Bronco, then went to the Bears, and now is with the Jets. They traded him for, I don't know, whatever. Brandon Marshall is now with his third team in like 5 years. And I do start to wonder at some point, when you're changing teams that often, there's something wrong. There's something inherently wrong about what you're doing. I don't know if it's the way you take care of business. I don't know if it's your attitude. I don't know if it's how you are in the locker room or how you are in the media. Something's wrong if teams just keep saying, you know what, yeah, he's good. But let's try something else. We got to try something else. The Jets now, bizarrely, they cut Percy Harvin yesterday, but the Jets now have a couple of draft picks, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker. They've got some weapons. Of course, they still have Geno Smith, so I mean, it all evens out. But they are starting to get a few weapons up there. Now they have Darrelle Revis. I don't know. Here's another thing that I'm seeing that should concern the NFL. And we talked about this just a minute ago. We've now seen a number of players. 26-year-old Jake Locker, 30-year-old Patrick Willis, 29-year-old Maurice Jones-Drew, and now 27-year-old Jason Worlds. And they are retiring from the NFL. And you can sit there and you can say, well, yeah, it's just an injury thing. And yeah, that's a problem, though. Because as a young person watching this league and seeing you can only play till you're 27, 28. I mean, Jake Locker was 26 and they're retiring. That tells me you are taking a beating physically. And what about these head injuries? I know we've talked about that in the past. What about these head injuries? The NFL should be looking at the age of some of these retirees and starting to become very, very concerned about their future. I'm not saying the NFL is going to crash, but I'm saying I'd look at it. I'd start to look at it because you are seeing players younger and younger stepping away from the game. And that is not good for business. That is not good for business because in the future, if I am a young player with the talent to play at that level and I have the choice between going Major League Baseball or NFL, guess where I'm going? I'm sure not going to the place where I'm retiring at 26. Also, what exactly is Jake Locker retiring from? Laying on a gurney? There's an article on the website about that. You might want to take a look at that at dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Hey, there are still free agents out there. There are still a number of players out there who are available that I just want you to think about. We're going to see them signing in the next few days. Terrence Knighton, like I said, sounds to me like the Broncos may have lowballed him that offer. They didn't offer him very much. Then the Raiders lowballed him even more, and he says, I'm not going with the Raiders or the Broncos. I'm going somewhere else. Going to go meet with the Redskins today. DeMarco Murray, of course, is still out there. Talking with the Jaguars, they can throw him a ton of bank, but I don't know if he's going to want to sign anytime soon with Jacksonville. Stefan Wisniewski is out there. I believe he is talking to a few teams still. Broncos could use a center. I'm just throwing that out there. Antonio Cromartie is still out there. Brian Arakpo is still out there. Nick Fairley is still out there. Still a number of players we are going to see signing probably later today and the rest of this week. A lot of things out there. From the home site here, Denver Broncos, you look at it and you say, I don't know if they did much. I don't know if they really went after anybody. They did sign two tight ends. They let Julius Thomas leave. He signed with Jacksonville. They did sign Virgil Green to a three-year deal. And I mean, Virgil Green is a blocking guy. He is a blocker. And that is what the Broncos, maybe under the Gary Kubiak, you know, thing need. Maybe that's kind of what they need. I know that within that offense, it's more of a play-action offense. It's going to be a little bit different, and so they went and got him. But then they went and they did get Owen Daniels. Owen Daniels has been with the Ravens. He's been with the Texans. He's played for Gary Kubiak before, a little more athletic. He's had a couple injuries in his career, but Owen Daniels comes in, and maybe he can take up some of that workload that is going to be lost with Julius Thomas leaving. Interesting things going to free agency. Yesterday, seriously, was crazy. I felt like I was watching the draft or something. It was just a crazy day. Going to talk a little bit more about the NFL a little bit later in the show. Got to talk some boxing, though. We have to talk some boxing. And I know we don't spend a ton of time talking about boxing, but we've got one of the biggest fights in recent memory coming up, obviously, with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. And we have some controversy coming out. Yes, that makes it even better. We like that. Manny Pacquiao's trainer, Freddie Roach, says that Floyd Mayweather's promoter slash manager slash whatever, Al Haymon, is paying off prospective sparring partners to not spar with Manny. He's trying to keep fighters from getting him ready for Floyd Mayweather. So as a boxer, you know, you sit there with your trainer and you say, okay, let's bring in this fighter. He kind of fights like him. And let's bring in this fighter. He kind of has a stance like him. And let's bring in this fighter. Maybe he even looks like him and similar size. And let's bring in this fighter. He has a defense like him. And so you bring in three or four or five different fighters and you say, they're going to help us in these different areas. Well, Floyd Mayweather's guy is going out and finding these fighters that Manny wants to spar with, and he's saying, hey, I'll pay you more to not spar with him. That way I just help Mayweather, you know, a little bit more. This is a little bit weird. It would be like, to give you kind of a comparison, it would be like Bill Belichick paying off the Seattle Seahawks scout team to not practice for the Super Bowl, which, but to be fair, Belichick would totally do. But isn't this kind of what we expect in boxing? It's a filthy, filthy sport. You have filthy judges. You have filthy promoters. You have filthy managers. You have filthy fighters. At this point, I'm just really hoping we don't have one of the boxers like drop a brick in their glove like the old Looney Tunes cartoon and come out and try to fight like that. We have some controversy. Got some things, you know, going. As we get closer to that fight, trust me on this, we will get you ready for this fight, give you an idea of which way we're going to go. Might do something special for that fight. Just kind of keep that in mind. Let's talk about the NBA a little bit. Crushing news for the Portland Trailblazers this week. They lose shooting guard Wesley Matthews to a torn Achilles, and Matthews is going to lose. He'll miss the rest of the season. You know, the bad thing about that Achilles injury, and I've seen it in basketball players, you see it in football players every once in a while, that Achilles injury can alter your career. Fortunately for the Blazers, they did make that move at the trade deadline where they brought in Aaron Aflalo. Aflalo is not Wesley Matthews, though. Aflalo gives them a little bit of shooting. He gives them a little bit of defense. I mean, Matthews was giving them 16 points a game. He was giving them 3 three-pointers a game, which for that team, when they have good spacing and they're moving the ball well, they can score a lot of points. Worst thing, and the thing that I honestly feel the worst about is this. This was a contract year for Wesley Matthews. For those of you who don't know his story, he was almost that undrafted, unsigned, came in and earned his way on with the Blazers. And he was making, you know, kind of that league minimum money, but he wasn't getting paid. He was about to get paid. And you hope for Wes Matthews. You hope he can come back. You hope he can still get that paycheck because he's a very, very good player. Tough break for him. A lot of people now are saying that, you know, that punch to them, that dropping Matthews now keeps Portland from being, you know, a true contender to win it all. I have some good news, Portland fans. I have some good news for you concerning that. If you were sitting there and you were saying, I don't know if we can win it all, you know, without Wesley Matthews, I have good news for you, Portland fan. You weren't going to win it all anyways. So there's that. Take heart. You weren't there anyway. So let's be real, you know, honest about that. You know, we spend a lot of time, and obviously on this show and every other show, we spend a lot of time. We talk about the MVPs. And I think this year it's kind of a four-man MVP race. You've got, obviously, LeBron. James Harden is in the mix. Steph Curry has to be in there somewhere. I guess you got to put Russell Westbrook in there. We sit there and we talk a lot about who are the best teams, and we've talked a little bit about that. You know, the best teams, we've got the Hawks, got the Grizzlies, you've got the Cavaliers, you got to throw them in the mix somewhere. You got a number of different teams that look like they're, you know, where is Golden State? Is Golden State really, you know, built to be a contender? Are they really going to, you know, is it going to pay off for them when we get to playoff time? We spend a lot of time talking about those contenders. But let's get down to something a little bit different. Who is the worst team this year in the NBA? Who's the worst team in the NBA? Because there is a ton. There is a ton to choose from. We have so many bad teams in the NBA. It's hard to pick just one. And the thing that's hard about it is you have to try to a little bit separate who really is bad and who is trying to really be bad. It is tough to come up with the worst team in the league. Like when I first hear that, when I first hear worst team in the league, my first reaction is to go with Philadelphia 76ers. Obviously, we've seen they have mortgaged the present for the hopeful future. I mean, and the Sixers are horrible. They're 14-49. I mean, they're bad, but you know, they just beat the Atlanta Hawks on Saturday. They beat the first place Atlanta Hawks on Saturday. So as bad as Philly is, they're kind of weirdly not playing as horrible as I'm sure their management would like them to. And yes, I know the Hawks were resting everyone. I get it. But the Sixers have still won 14 games. And you know, just maybe a week or two ago, I would have put the Denver Nuggets in this conversation. The Nuggets are horrible. But then they fired Brian Shaw. Now, understand this about when they fired their head coach, Brian Shaw. It isn't that firing Brian Shaw fixed it. And, oh, well, Brian Shaw was clearly the problem, and now they're better. No. But it puts everyone on notice that you might get cut next. That's all that did. And so now Denver is at least playing harder. They've won 3 out of 5 since they fired Brian Shaw. And it's not that their talent is any better, but they're just playing harder. Look at Will Barton, who they picked up in the Aaron Aflalo trade. He came over from Portland. That kid plays hard every single night. I like what I'm seeing from Will Barton. I don't know if he can really stick, but I do like what I'm seeing. And just playing hard hides so many flaws. It hides a ton of flaws. The two worst teams in the league right now, and this is crazy to say this, when you think about this with history, and you think about this as far as the cities, it's got to be the Knicks and the Lakers. I mean, can you believe that? It's got to be the Knicks and the Lakers. And I realize that both teams are trying. They're trying to be bad. They're succeeding at least at that. Knicks are 12-51. 12-51. They have lost 5 games in a row right now, and they look awful. Lakers, 16-46. 17-46. They actually won last night. Lakers are horrible. And the funny thing about both of these teams is they are trying so hard to lose. I mean, the Lakers went and messed up last night and beat the Pistons. And you know management was just like, what are you doing? Come on. I mean, the Lakers aren't even starting their best players. They don't even start. I mean, they'll have Boozer coming off the bench. They'll start Swaggy P and they'll be putting like Ed Davis in. Ryan Kelly's getting some minutes. What? Who are these people? I don't even understand. They are trying so hard to be bad. I have a feeling that that we are going to see one of these teams, Knicks and Lakers, maybe both of them. somehow they're just going to get a real, real friendly pick in the lottery. It's magical. It's amazing the way those coincidences sometimes work, but I bet we're going to see a return to prominence for the Knicks and the Lakers. It's just, they're too big of markets. I realize you're probably sitting there and you're saying, hey, what about Minnesota? What about the Minnesota Timberwolves? They're terrible too. How come they're not in the conversation? And I'll tell you why I don't put them in there. Because they've actually done some things this year that are a little bit positive. They actually have some things to feel halfway good about. I know their record is worse than the Lakers. They're 14-48. But the Timberwolves, you've got Kevin Martin. You've got Andrew Wiggins, who looks like going to be a pretty good player. Thaddeus Young has played well lately. They actually have some things to feel good about. Worst teams in the league, Knicks and the Lakers. Who would have thought it? Let's talk a little bit of Major League Baseball. I don't want to get into Major League Baseball too heavy just yet. Obviously, we have other things to talk about. But I got to talk about one story in Major League Baseball. Did you see this? Did you see New York Yankees general manager? New York Yankees general manager Brian Cashman says the Yankees should retire the captaincy after Derek Jeter. His quote, "As far as I'm concerned, our captaincy should be retired with number two. I wouldn't give another captain's title to anyone else." Now, you know, we talked a little bit in the last few weeks about retiring numbers, and I just think retiring numbers is so stupid. It's so dumb. It's a different player. Put whatever number out there you want. I don't care. I know here in Denver we've retired some numbers. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I'm not going to somehow go, oh, no one can ever wear number 7 again because John Elway wore it. Retiring numbers to me is dumb. And the Yankees are the dumbest at this. They retire every single number ever. The Yankees are getting ready. They're going to either have to start handing out like triple-digit numbers and introducing at second base number 463, or they're going to have to start giving letters. Letter H, you don't want that. So retiring numbers to me is dumb enough. This imbecile wants to retire captains. Now, I understand what he's saying. Maybe there'll never be a captain as great as Derek Jeter. But keep in mind the players who have come through the Yankees organization. You could have retired it years ago. You still managed to get good players. There's always that next player. There's always that next great player. And if you sit there and you say, we're just going to retire the captaincy, first off, captains don't do a ton. Maybe, hopefully, provide some leadership in your locker room. That's the biggest thing. But captains don't do a ton for you. But you want to retire captains? I'm not impressed. I'm really not. You retire a captain, so what? Okay, maybe you don't have that guy in the locker room or doesn't have the guy with the C on his jersey, whatever. You want to impress me. You really want to impress me, Brian Cashman? Retire shortstops. You know what? We're just going to play without a shortstop. That's how much Derek Jeter meant to us. He was the best shortstop. We're just going to play without shortstops from now on. Now you've got my attention. Again, now I sit there and say, hold up. This guy's doing something a little bit different than everyone else. He's just going to play with a gap there right in the left short field. I like that idea. You want to impress me? Retire playing shortstops at all. Now you'll get my attention. The biggest thing that I want to talk about this week, we've talked about NFL free agency. We've talked about, a little bit of boxing, a little bit of baseball, a little bit of basketball. The biggest thing I want to talk about, most fun time of the year, March Madness is coming. March Madness is coming. We're going to talk some college hoops. But before we get to that, let's talk just briefly about Syracuse and Jim Boeheim. If you didn't see the situation with Syracuse and Jim Boeheim, I'll run it down just briefly for you. The NCAA completed a nearly 10-year investigation on Syracuse athletic programs. And they found some academic fraud. They found extra benefits given. They found the drug policy not being enforced. They basically declared a loss of institutional control. They've put the program on probation. They're going to miss postseason. They're going to vacate 108 wins from head coach Jim Boeheim. And I have a couple of problems with this. First off, I heard some people saying, well, Boeheim's out of there. They're not going to fire him. They're going to keep him. Jim Boeheim is an institution at that school. They're not going to do anything with him. Couple things. Academic fraud. We all knew there was academic fraud going on. Remember, they had Fab Mello back there. They were trying to get him eligible, couldn't get him eligible, couldn't get the grades. All of a sudden, he got the grades. He didn't just get smart one day. Obviously, they were fudging these grades and trying to get him through. Extra benefits. I know that goes on at every college, but it's a matter of getting caught. Drug policy. They violated the drug policy. Now, this one is interesting. This one is interesting because if you have a drug policy at your school, let me ask you this. What's the drug policy in the NCAA? Anybody know? Do you know what the drug policy is at the NCAA? Do you have any idea what the drug policy is? Let me tell you what the drug policy is per the NCAA. We don't have one. That's what the drug policy is. Here's what the drug policy really is. Each school sets their own drug policy. So if I'm at Syracuse and I say, hey, if you're busted one time, then you're out of the program. Maybe that's my policy. Or maybe I'm at Florida State and we say, hey, we catch you snorting cocaine off the back of a stripper and you're fine. No big deal. It just kind of depends where you are. Every university sets their own drug policy. It's not like this broad across the board drug policy. So at the same time, for them to enforce it, really, doesn't it kind of seem stupid? You make it up as you go. If you tell me I can set the speed limit to whatever I want, then you can't get mad at me if I drive 85. If you want a drug policy enforced, then set one across the board, or you can't really say anything. Now, what they say is that Syracuse violated their own drug policy. And I'm sure they did. I'm sure they had kids test positive for drugs and then said, who cares? You're playing. Keep in mind, coaches at this level get fired for not winning. They don't get fired for enforcing drug policies. They get fired for not winning. Huge difference. The thing that I don't understand, there's a couple of questions that I have about this, though. One of the things I don't understand is it wasn't just basketball. There were some violations with football. There were some violations with some other programs. So why are you vacating wins just for Boeheim? I realize he's the guy with all the wins. I realize he's the big head. He's the guy with the big name. So you go after him. But what makes him so special that you have to specifically go after Jim Boeheim? And believe me, it's not like I'm a Boeheim fan. I've heard him talk at a clinic. I think I took a nap. Not the most enthusiastic fellow. But I just wonder about that. Here's the other thing I wonder about. I've noticed that despite the investigation going back before that 2003 championship, remember, they beat Kansas, they won the championship. The investigation went back before that, but they didn't touch the championship. They didn't say, hey, and you're going to vacate the championship. They didn't say, hey, and you know, remember that championship that you won? That's really, you know, kind of bogus too. No, they said, we're going to start the day after the championship. It literally was like a week after the championship that they put all this in. You think that's a coincidence? Maybe. Pretty amazing. It seems to me this is the type of arbitrary nonsense that the NCAA has done again and again and again. They just kind of make it up as they go. And in a few years, when we see all these big schools, and I'm talking about the big power conferences, just say, you know what, NCAA, we don't need you anymore. Why don't you go away and we'll just run ourselves and we'll just take care of ourselves. We'll rule ourselves. We'll govern ourselves. We don't need you anymore. Remember that. Remember that. Because of all these stupid little rulings that they've put in. Remember what they did to Penn State. You see what they're doing now. You see some of the things they turn, you know, they won't look at. Some of the things that were going on in Miami, they really didn't even touch. But some goofy things, that it's arbitrary. It's just what they feel like in the moment, and they'll come after certain programs. I don't understand it. I'm not saying Syracuse doesn't deserve to be punished. They obviously do. There clearly were things going on. It's just kind of bizarre what they pick to go after. And who they pick to go after. And when it's a big name, we will come after you. But the football coach, to be honest, let's be real clear. You didn't even know they had football at Syracuse anymore, did you? I think they had football back in the days of Jim Brown. Do they still have it? Oh, they have uniforms and everything? You didn't even know that. They didn't go after that football coach, though. Didn't have the big name. Something to think about. Now, let's get back to the real thing. The madness is coming. And I love March Madness. March Madness, like I told you last week, of all the things, of all the sporting events, March Madness actually lives up to the hype. And to be honest, with conference championship, you know, going this week, so now you have these individual conference tournaments going, and some of these conference tournaments win and make the tournament, lose, and you're done for the year. March Madness is kind of already here. You know, last night, I watched... And I won't even lie. I watched Robert Morris versus St. Francis, Brooklyn or whoever. And I watched Valparaiso and Green Bay. Why? Because it's on TV and because it's amazing. And one team is going home and one team is going to make the dance. And you, if you're not watching it, and I understand, maybe you don't have a team to root for. Maybe you don't have a team that you're in. Maybe college basketball is just not big in your area. I know here in Colorado, college hoops just isn't that big. Basketball, honestly, isn't that big. We are Bronco Nation here in Denver. But college hoops is so good. Do yourself a favor. Turn on one of those games tonight. You will see such good drama. You see some good basketball. You'll see some very, very good coaches. And like I've told you in the past, you know, March Madness starts next week. The Daily Dose will get you ready. We will have you able to pick out your brackets. We'll give you, hey, here's some teams that could get upset. Here's some teams to watch. Here's a couple of different methods you could use to fill out your bracket and give yourself a good chance in your office pool, because this time of year, it is all about the office pool. So make sure you're tuning in next week. A couple teams I want to give you. I'm just going to throw out a few teams that have already punched their ticket to the big dance. They will be there. The North Florida Ospreys will make their first appearance in the national tournament. Coastal Carolina, they were just in last year. They are back in. The Northeastern Huskies have not made a tournament since 1991. They're going to get in. I told you, I watched Valparaiso last night come back and win. This is their ninth tournament appearance. I'm going to give you a team that you need to keep an eye on. The Northern Iowa Panthers. They are 30-3. Remember I said that. Northern Iowa is a team you want to keep an eye on. Robert Morris won last night. They were last in 2010. The Belmont Bruins, a coach you may not know about, very, very good, has taken Belmont to seven tournaments. Rick Bird always has his team, it seems like, ready to go. Wofford Terriers are in. North Dakota State Bison were in last year. You might remember them beating Oklahoma. The reason I give you those teams is not just, yes, those are the teams that are already in. Gonzaga, by the way, is also already in, but they get in every year, so who cares? The reason I tell you those teams, North Florida, Coastal Carolina, Northeastern, Valparaiso, all these teams that you've never heard of and you're like, where are they at? And you can play a game later. Where is this team at on the map? One of those teams, two of those teams, maybe three of those teams, they're going to not just get in, they're going to win games in the tournament. It will happen. It happens every single year. Teams that we don't see coming get in and they win games. Selection Sunday will be this week. Sunday afternoon, we will get, 68 teams now? 68 teams. I think we need to go back to 48. I know, we always go forward, not backwards, but felt a little better when it was 48. And then, you have that 68 round, will start next Tuesday and Wednesday, and then you'll start the true round of 64 on Thursday and Friday. Next Wednesday, we will get you ready for the brackets. Don't worry about those first play-in games, whatever they are. I know they call them the first round. They're not the first round. They're the play-in games. We all know what they are. And I don't like them, just for the record. The real first round is Thursday and Friday. We'll get you ready for it, though. Have your bracket there. Have it handy. We'll give you a few teams and a couple ideas where you want to go with your bracket. Number one seeds. Who's going to get the number one seeds? We know one. We know Kentucky's getting a number one seed. Can anyone beat Kentucky? If I put you in Vegas right now, bet your house, Kentucky or the field, which way are you going? Taking Kentucky? You taking the other 67 teams that are out there? Going to be interesting. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about the type of team that could take down the undefeated Kentucky Wildcats. There is a team out there that could knock them out. It might surprise you who it might be, though. I believe the other number one seeds, I believe Virginia is going to be a number one seed. I know they need to get healthy. Got a kid out getting an appendectomy. I know they got to get healthy. Virginia plays the kind of defense that can carry you. I think the committee will look at Virginia, strength of schedule, what they've done this year. Virginia's been very, very tough. I think Virginia's going to get a one seed. I think Duke is going to get a number one seed. And I think they're going to get it basically on their name and Mike Krzyzewski. Don't get me wrong. The Duke Blue Devils are very, very good this year. They could go deep in the tournament. They're young. Youth always scares me a little bit in the tournament. Seems like teams that are a little bit more mature understand what it's like to battle night in, night out. But Duke is so explosive offensively. They're so talented offensively. I think Duke's going to get a number one seed. That last seed, I think they're probably going to give to Arizona. We'll see. I don't think they're going to give it to Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga played its way out. Maybe Wisconsin, but I think they're going to give it to Arizona. Again, I think they're going to look at the strength of their schedule, look at who they played, look at how they've been playing down the stretch. You know, the problem I have with the tournament process and the committee process, and we're getting 68 teams in, so it's not like college football where we say you've only got four in and I can gripe about five and six. The strange thing when they select these teams that get in the tournament, though, is that it seems like it's also kind of arbitrary how they pick certain teams. Because they'll look at teams and they'll say, now we picked Duke here because they had such a great strength of schedule. And we looked at their last 10 games and they had played really, really well. And you say, okay, well, that makes sense. And then we took Arizona here because we kind of didn't look at their last 10 games, but we looked at their you know, bulk of their work up to that point. Well, wait a second. How come it mattered for Duke, but it didn't matter for – it just – they kind of make it up as they go, seems like. Now, as we do every single week, a very, very popular segment we got to get to. We got to do the Daily Dose Top 5. And you know, we do the Daily Dose Top 5 every week. You never know which way it's going to go. Sometimes, you know, we entertain you. Sometimes we inform you. Sometimes, hopefully, we do both. I know usually every week, it's funny the responses I get to the show. Last week, I got a ton of responses last week. When we were, I was actually, you know, talking about our top five. People really liked the top five. But you know what I got a ton of responses to was Kurt Schilling and his responses on Twitter to the people that came out and were kind of attacking his daughter. I got a ton of responses from that. I'd like to thank the people that did listen and reach out on that. But I usually do get feedback on the top five. Love the top five. Disagree on the top five. Hated your top five. You're an idiot. Whatever I might get. You know, you never know. But this week, we are going to go with the top five. We had free agents. We have NFL free agency. It's blowing up. It's bigger and bigger, it seems like, every year. We look at the draft bigger. We look at free agency bigger. We look at all these things. NFL is just year-round. Today, we are going to look at the Daily Dose Top 5 worst NFL free agent signings in history. And that covers a lot of ground. This was actually kind of a tough one to get because there are a ton of bad signings every year. And so it was kind of tough because you look at it and you say, okay, is it based on the contract? Is it based on the amount of money? Is it based on the production on the field? And what I did, honestly, was I tried to kind of combine the two. You kind of combine the two because you have the contract and the expectations. Sometimes it's just the expectations. You came in and you were supposed to be the savior. Not only were you not the savior, you were terrible. And sometimes it's just purely the production on the field. But today, our Daily Dose Top 5 worst NFL free agent signings in history. Number 5 on our list, 1994. You know, there was this quarterback, and he was playing backup for Dan Marino down in Miami. And he had gotten in a game here or there, and when he got in the game in Don Shula's offense, he looked pretty good. He looked like he was pretty solid. You're like, this guy, big, strong guy, he might be pretty good. But he just is. He's never going to get a chance to play down in Miami behind Marino. He's never going to unseat Marino. And so the Detroit Lions bring in Scott Mitchell. And they bring in quarterback Scott Mitchell on a team. And you look at the talent that was around him. They had a pretty decent defense. It wasn't a great defense. They had a exciting defense. A lot of talent, a lot of speed. But they brought them in on this offense with Barry Sanders, with Herman Moore, with Brett Perryman. You were like, okay, Scott Mitchell is going to step into this offense, and they are going to be scoring 50 points a game. We are basically going to be seeing the greatest show on turf, you know, 10 years ahead of time. I mean, it's going to be amazing what this team is going to do. And Scott Mitchell just never really materialized. They brought him in. You know, they gave him 4 years, $21 million. Again, it's not a huge amount of money, although this is back in 94, so it was a lot bigger then. And he got him to the playoffs. They made the wild card game twice. They lost twice, and they looked horrible both times. And he specifically looked horrible. I think he had 5 interceptions in those games and no touchdowns. He had a 27-30 record, and in those 5 years that he played with the Lions, he had 57 interceptions. With Herman Moore, Barry Sanders, Brett Perryman, you couldn't do something? Scott Mitchell wins our number 5 worst NFL free agent signing. Number four on our list of worst free agents that were signed. We got to stay right here in Denver for this one. And if you don't know, Mike Shanahan was in charge. You know, great coach. I think Mike Shanahan is a very, very good coach, especially when he has talent, as most coaches are. I think he knows how to manage talent very well. As a personnel guy, not so good. Mike Shanahan, in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, 2003, he was starting to just get a little bit crazy, he was like a young king. He was just like, I'm going to take this and I'm going to have one of these. And it didn't make any sense. It was just very, very strange. He decided they need to rebuild this defense. The defense had struggled the previous season in 2002. They had gone like 8-8 and 9-7 like he did every single year after Elway left. And he decided, I'm going to bring in a defensive tackle. I'm going to bring in a guy. He's played a little with Washington. He's played with Miami. Looks like he has a ton of talent. I'm going to bring in Darryl Gardner at 7 years and $35 million. And they gave him a ton of it up front guaranteed money. He had a huge signing bonus. I think it was like $5 million, which at the time, again, was huge. Darryl Gardner comes to town. And when he gets to town, first off, right off the bat, he's out at like 2 in the morning at like a local IHOP, and he gets in a fight and like cuts his wrist and like lacerates a tendon in his wrist or something. So he misses like the first 6 games of the year. Then he comes back and he plays a game or so, and he gets suspended for, you know, the whole conduct detrimental to the team. Then, as he's out on suspension, they're about to bring him back, and someone does an interview with Mr. Gardner, and Gardner talks about Shanahan and says, that little man is trying to ruin my career. And Shanahan suspends him again. He gets 2 suspensions. They ended up just finally saying forget it, and they cut him. Darryl Gardner, 7 years, $35 million. He played 5 games and made 5 tackles in all of that time. Darryl Gardner has to be one of the worst free agent signings ever. I know here in Denver, he takes the cake. There's one other guy that might be out there, but Darryl Gardner is the worst free agent signing in Denver. He makes number 4 on our list. Number 3 on our list, worst NFL free agents. Now, when I'm reading these, just keep in mind all the money being thrown out right now. Just throwing that out there, because I know at the time some of these guys, we looked at them and said, oh, the Lions got Scott Mitchell. Look out, here they come. Oh, the Dolphins just signed Ndamukong Suh. Look out, they're going to win a Super Bowl. Just lobbing that out there. Just food for thought. Number 3 on our list, 2003 San Diego Chargers. There was a wide receiver that was playing down in Arizona with the Cardinals. Big, strong kid. Go attack the football. And the San Diego Chargers decided they would go get wide receiver David Boston. They gave him 7 years for $47.5 million. And Boston came to town. And a couple things that went wrong with David Boston. First off, he was horrible in the locker room. Wouldn't listen to coaching. Wouldn't do what he was supposed to do. Didn't play hard. Didn't work hard on the practice field. Secondly, dude started to balloon up like Barry Bonds. Like he was putting, in fact, for a while, they moved him to tight end because he was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the whole league saw it. Like everyone saw it. Dude is getting huge. Like I'm surprised we can't see a hypodermic needle sticking out of him as he walks out on the field because he was getting gigantic. Head getting big, everything getting big. He lasted 1 season. And they had to end up cutting him. He played in just 14 games. And by 2006, he was completely out of the NFL. David Boston wins our number 3 award this week for worst free agent. Number 2 on our list. And number 2 is kind of tough. Because number 2, you look at it, and I'm going to read you the contract numbers. And you're going to be like, big deal. Who cares? But number 2, the 96 Raiders. And we could have done a top 5 with just Raiders free agent signings. Please understand that. That would have been very, very simple to do. Larry Brown played in Super Bowl 30. He was a member of the Dallas Cowboys. They played against the Steelers. And you might remember in that game, Neil O'Donnell just throws 2 interceptions directly to Larry Brown. He didn't have to make a play on the ball. He didn't have to anticipate. He didn't have to jump a route. He literally stood there and it hit him in the chest. So he makes these 2 interceptions. He didn't really do anything, but he made these 2 interceptions. The Raiders look at him and are like, that is our guy. He won the Super Bowl MVP. That is our guy. They go give him a 5-year contract for $19 million. I told you, not a huge amount of money, but this isn't about the money. Larry Brown came to the Raiders, who were not great at the time. This is a team that was struggling at the time. They weren't even a real strong football team. He couldn't even crack the starting lineup. He couldn't even get into the starting rotation. That's how bad Larry Brown was. And here he was, one of the highest paid players on their roster. He started 1 game in 2 years. 1 game in 2 years, and then found himself back with Dallas shortly and then out of the league. The Oakland Raiders make our list at number two, worst free agent signings ever. And number one on our list, worst NFL free agent signings in history, has to be the 2009 Redskins, as they give a seven-year deal, $100 million, to Albert Haynesworth. And Albert Haynesworth came to town. And this is the one thing that I know teams struggle with. Once you get that big contract, which way are you going to go? Why do you have to work as hard as you used to? You got that big contract. You don't have to work as hard. Albert Haynesworth took those words to heart, because when he came to Washington, he literally wouldn't play. There is a clip, I think you can find it on YouTube, of Haynesworth, I think it was versus the Eagles that year. And Haynesworth literally, he would just stand there. He was like, I don't care. I got paid. I'm not moving. I'm not going to run. I'm not jogging. I'm not going to do anything. He just stood there. He started 12 games. He was horrible in the locker room. He didn't care. He absolutely didn't care. He got his checks, and he got his checks, and he got his checks, and he eventually just quit. They traded him to the Patriots. He was horrible with the Patriots and had that same bad attitude. And Albert Haynesworth, 7 years, $100 million in 2009, was completely out of the NFL by 2012. He is our worst free agent signing in the history of NFL free agency. And I don't know if it's even close. Albert Haynesworth was bad, bad news. He just decided, I'm not playing anymore. It's been fun. Thanks for the checks. I'm done. Hey, next week, like I told you, we will get you ready to fill out your NCAA brackets. Make sure you have those handy, because we will give you teams to watch. We will give you some upsets to look for. We will give you a couple different methods you can use if you just want to fill out your bracket. Give you a few things you want to think about when you fill out that bracket. Remember, most important thing is getting that bracket, trying to win that office pool. We know how that is. Plus, we're going to still talk about some NFL free agency. There's going to be some more signings in the next few days. I'll bet we'll even see some today. We'll recap all of that. We'll talk NBA. And as usual, we will give you our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to miss the Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, like I told you before, check out our website. You can go to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. I've got a few different articles up there, got some polls up there, putting new content up there, trying to get some stuff up there every day, at least a few times a week. You can follow me at Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. You can follow me on Facebook at Daily Dose Sports. Would love to hear from you. Please, please, please do me a favor. If you listen to the podcast, and I have heard from some people that listen to it, they enjoy it every week, please go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. Doesn't have to be anything huge. Just say love the podcast, give us the 5-star rating. It means so much to us, and it helps us get into that up and coming podcast. We'd appreciate that so much. Make sure you get on there. Please go out and do that. Subscribe, rate, review. We would appreciate it so much. As usual, could not do this without JSP. Thank you for all that you do. I will see you all next week. Hopefully you have a great week, and we will get you ready for March Madness next week. Hey, have a great week, everybody.